Right, well, good evening, everybody. We have a debate. We have a chair and we have three speakers, and Ian Parsley, I think, is going to join us a little bit later on. It's not a formal debate as such. There's no formal motion, but we're discussing on the back of Murdo's theory about rebranding and federal conservatism, whether it would be the right thing for the United Kingdom and specifically the right thing in Northern Ireland to have a centre-right, unapologetic centre-right party. So, speakers tonight, Ian McGill is a former Conservative, Scottish Conservative Westminster candidate. He stood last year in Edinburgh Central. So you stood as a Conservative. Did you win?
No, the paper candidate won.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Bill Manwaring stood for the Ulster Conservative Unionist New Force in West Belfast in the 2010 Westminster election. Did you win?
Oh, yeah. Jerry gave up.
No, me neither. Ian Parsley stood as a UKIMF candidate in North Down. I think you know where this is going. So the only guy who's untainted is young unionist Richard Price.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yes. So what we say about talk for up to 10 minutes each, guys. Just kind of set out your stall and then we'll make it as informal and as interactive as we can. Okay, Richard.
Okay, well, just a little bit about myself. My name is Richard Price. I'm a young unionist. Unlike my other three panellists, I haven't run for Parliament, but just like them, I have stood and been rejected by the electorate.
So you said we weren't young there,
yeah.
Sorry.
So we're going there again. But I don't like to talk about that, so we'll talk about Murdo Fraser and his plans that he's announced in Scotland for reconstituting the centre-right political force in that part of the United Kingdom. And I'm going to sort of tackle this with three questions. Why are we having this event? Why have we brought you here, and why are we talking about it? Two, why do I think Murdo Fraser's right in his idea of new unionism, as he calls it? And why do I think that this might work here in Northern Ireland and be to the benefit of the public? Well, why are we having the debate or the discussion? I think it's an important question to ask because it gives you a sense of what we're doing and trying to get out of the night. But it's also really about how do we project centre-right politics across the United Kingdom to its best effect? And I'm asking the question, actually, in many senses, because the DUP, I've seen on Facebook, have been asking or saying, this is typical Ulster Unionists, they're talking to themselves again. I wanted to consider that. Is that valid? Are we just talking to ourselves? But when I think of centre-right politics and what it can bring to in terms of improvement in the economy, in terms of jobs and everything else, I think we're talking to lots of people. I think we're talking to every businessman who's wondering whether to expand his company or his or her company and create jobs, but he's not sure whether the tax and regulation system is going to make the risk not worth the reward. I think we're talking to every victim of rioting or crime who's fed up with politicians that are in hoc with paramilitary groups in their community. And I think we're talking to every recent graduate in this country who's coming out with good degrees but feel they have to go elsewhere to get decent jobs. I think so. We're not talking to ourselves, we're talking to all those people. Whether any of those people are listening is a different question, but it's also part of this discussion because Murdo Fraser's idea is that the values of conservatism and the values of centre-right policy propositions are not getting a fair hearing and that something has to change. So, question two, why is Murdo Fraser's new unionism something worth listening to, something worth paying attention to? Well, I'll give a short praise to anyone who's uninitiated with what it is he's proposing. I'd give a caveat, I'm not Scottish, I'm not intimately involved in Scottish politics, but I am an interested observer. So I apologise to Murdo and his team if I misrepresent what he's trying to do. But from what I've seen of his website, what I've seen of his speeches, he's starting from the proposition there's been no progress in the Conservative vote since 1997. Elsewhere in the United Kingdom, in Wales and other parts of England, the vote's gone up and the representation has gone up, but there's been a steadfast non-movement in Scotland. And he's fed up with that situation. And in his reassessment, he's looked at why is that the case, and he's citing polling, which shows that if you ask Scottish voters why would they not vote Conservative, only 6% of Scottish people think the Conservatives put Scotland first, and over 50% of them believe that the Conservatives put England first. That's a very clear indicator of where Scottish opinion is in relation to the Conservative Party. So he wants to reformulate the centre right in Scotland as markedly more Scottish. And to do that, he wants to break the dependency on the London Conservative Party or headquarters and have an independent centre right party that's aligned and sistered to the London Party in a sort of CDU, CSU style in Germany. And it's also, it's not something that's as radical as it may sound, because he's looking at the model from the 1950s. In Scotland, it used to be called the Unionist Party. It was independent of London, and it got over 50% of the vote in Scotland and 22 MPs. And what a marked change that is now from where Scotland, where Conservatives have 12% of the vote and one MP. So he's drawing a distinction from 50s to where they are now, and wanting to actually return in some senses to that old relationship. The other strand of his new unionism is actually a sense of comfort with devolution, that this is not something actually as threatening as might have been originally supposed. It's not a slippery slope, or as Jim Allister would say here, it's not cutting the guide ropes. It's welcome in places, in fact, and it makes sense in others. And Murdo Fraser is actually going one step further and being supportive of more powers being devolved, fiscal powers in particular. So, in summary, he thinks there is a centre-right vote out there, the three sort of groups that I described, businessmen, young graduates, victims of crime, but it's Englishness and the sense of the Scottish Conservatives' discomfort with devolution that might be putting them off otherwise voting for centre-right politics. I believe Murdo Fraser is right. I believe his vision is based on evidence, it's based on polling, it's based on election analytics, it's based on precedent in Germany and Bavaria, and in the 1950s in Scotland, what went before. And it's also based on future-proofing, looking at emerging trends, not only in this country in terms of devolution, but also across Europe, where in all the major Western European countries, there is devolution increasingly taking place, most recently further devolution in Belgium. So my last question, what has any of this got to do with the price of fish in Northern Ireland? Well, I believe the centre-right enjoys similar, though obviously not exact, problems over here. There's a failure to be heard over a quite dull consensus of centre-left, state-led solutions to public problems. There's little receptiveness for market-led solutions, and there's a perception that anything supply-side is automatically Thatcherite, and therefore English, and therefore not for Northern Ireland. And I see that, I think that's visible in some of the lack of imagination we've seen in things like the water rates debate, the education debate, the health debate, and the general cautiousness and scepticism that has been seen in the body politic about lowering corporation tax or making Northern Ireland an enterprise zone. So I think both in Scotland and Northern Ireland, we need to look again at what is the right way to get the message out about centre-right political solutions. One school of thought would say this should be the Northern Ireland Conservative Party. This is their unique mission, and they should champion this. And that their electoral breakthrough is just around the corner any day now. I'd say as gently as possible, I remain to be convinced of that. The Northern Ireland Conservatives have been fighting elections here for 25 years and have never really broken the 2% mark nationally. Indeed, on that track record, if Albert Einstein is correct when he says insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, well, if I was being unkind, the Northern Ireland Conservatives could maybe be sectioned. But so if it's not the Northern Ireland Conservative Party, what other vehicle exists that's out there to get these messages across to the public? Well, there's one that I can think of. There's a party that was formed out of the Conservative Party in 1905 over a breach of trust. Some lessons from history there, but with the London Party. But and one that has, over its 100 years of history, enjoyed repeated engagement with the Conservative Party in London and supported them at various times through history in Westminster. One that's mobilised, that re-established an electoral link with Conservatives last year and positively engaged in trying to promote the Conservative Manifesto here in 2010. One that might be said to be looking for a new mission post St Andrews and post Good Friday and post devolution. And one that still enjoys over 100,000 loyal voters. One that has a branch, an association network across the country, and I think that vehicle is the Ulster Unionist Party. So just to come to summation, I believe we owe it to that small businessman, we owe it to that victim of crime, and we owe it to those new graduates to do something to offer them better solutions than what they've currently got on the table. And we shouldn't let dogma or devotion and misplaced nostalgia about the past blind us to some of the opportunities for improved political performance that lie in our grasp. And on that point, I'll hand over to Ian Gill. In we go.
Thank you. Thank you very much. A brief background. My name's Ian McGill. I've now lost 10 elections for the Scottish Conservatives, so I know a thing or two. I know a thing or two about it. I've been lucky enough to have lost 3 elections in different parts of the country on the same day. So you can rack them up. We can rack them up pretty quickly, and I've had 4 in a year before. So it is. You can rack them up pretty quickly in Scotland. So don't hold that. Don't hold that particularly against me. I am working over here quite a lot. My family's from Larne. My mother's from Millbrook, and my father's from Leith in Edinburgh. So brought up between the two, mainly in Scotland though. And I concentrate mainly on what's going on in Scotland because my knowledge of Scottish politics is much greater than it is of Northern Irish politics. In the last year or so, I've started working over here much more. Try to engage with the Conservatives over here because I'm a bit of an anorak and I've got the bug and I quite like elections. Try to engage with the Conservatives. Never got too much because it's not really around, so fell in with a bad crowd like Richard Price and ended up helping Mark Hill lose an election. So I helped Mark lose his election whilst I was losing in Edinburgh Central. So if ever you're standing down the line, I'm not sure I'm the person you need on your team. Scotland's leading a debate at the moment, though. We're having a leadership election. We had a look at the whole structure of the party in Scotland because we have been getting roundly trounced in elections up and down the country, no matter how good or bad the individual candidates are, no matter how good or bad the individual campaigns have been. We've been getting trounced since 1997. So we've done a full look at how the party worked. The party was working in very inefficient way. So we had a leader of the SP groups, who are like our MLAs, so the members of the Scottish Parliament, they had their own leader. The MPs, or the MP, as it is, he is the leader of his own wee group. The MEPs, which have become an MEP, he is the leader of his own wee group. We have our party chairman, who's appointed by David Cameron. It's his in Scotland. So is he the leader? Is Annabel Goldie, is she the leader? Who is the leader? The members, they vote for a deputy chair. But he's the one with the mandate from the members, so is he in charge? We also have a director of the party who's a professional paid employee of the party. Is he in charge? So we had this many-headed vehicle, which wasn't particularly efficient. So we're having a leadership election at the moment to be the leader of the entire party. So whoever becomes this leader is going to be in a strong position, but hopefully it will help us with our steer. The leadership elections dominated the media up and down the country, which is great, right across the UK. It was quite a pleasure to wake up on a Sunday morning and see my good friend Murdo Fraser on the telly saying, I thought, great, Murdo's on the telly, he's announced, what's he saying? And the stuff he was saying was stuff I couldn't be identifying with particularly. He was on the telly saying that the Conservative brand was toxic in Scotland. He was embarrassed and ashamed to be out in the doors promoting the Conservative brand, that we were finished as the Conservative Party in our current structure and that we needed to be having a brand new party. So he was going to wind up the Conservatives, start a brand new party. Wow. So up and down the country, here was the deputy leader. Murdo Fraser was our deputy leader for the last 2 elections. He'd had every senior, you know, he'd had every position within the party over the last 20 years, except leader. Here was his pitch for leader, and his pitch for leader was that brand was toxic, we weren't going anywhere. Wow. So what was he basing that on? So, it's provoked a great debate up and down the country. Provoked 3 of his colleagues on the MSPs out of a group of 15, so there's now 4 of them going for the leadership. 3 of his colleagues to come out and say they're dead against his idea. So we've got Murdo running for his new party, and we've got 3 colleagues saying, no, we can make progress within our current structures. But it got us thinking about different things. So my instincts when I was thinking about this stuff is, gee, it's quite a It was quite a statement for Murdoch to come out with that we're a dysfunctional party with no future when we've got 400,000 loyal voters coming out and batting every time for the Scottish Conservatives are 400,000 voters. Do you know, in 2010, when I lost and everyone off and Leaf and Bill lost and we all lost, in 2010, there were more people voted in Scotland for the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats, who are now the government in the UK, than voted for the SNP in Scotland. You know, there is a mandate there for it. You know, we sit there and do ourselves down a little bit, saying we're unelectable, but actually, it was in Scotland. The Conservatives and Liberal Democrats put together polled more than the SNP did, and we ended up in government. And to me, that's a mandate. Everyone talks. Alex Salmond's done a great job of spin saying, no, the Tories and Lib Dems have no mandate in Scotland. Of course we've got a mandate in Scotland there. We've got a mandate across the UK, but we've got that mandate in Scotland. We've got these 400,000 loyal voters who are coming out. The trouble we've had is, as Richard pointed out, the polling shows that we're seen as being an English party in Scotland. And in Scotland, that's a problem, to be seen as an English party. So there's the polling's been done saying that only 4 or 5% of the country think we're speaking up for Scotland, and 50% plus think we're speaking up for England. Now Murdo would see that we need to have a new structure and a brand new party to be able to speak up effectively for Scotland and to be seen speaking effectively for Scotland. But when we look across the country, we look in Wales and we look even more at Boris Johnson in London. Now London is a very Labour city. London is not a natural Conservative city by any manner of means. But if you do that same poll and ask the same question, if Boris is speaking for England, if he's speaking for the UK, or if Boris Johnson's speaking for London, Boris is speaking very clearly for London in that polling, and he's doing that within the structure of the Conservatives. So I think we've been shy to be speaking against the London leadership. Far too shy to be doing that, and I don't see any great reason why we have been, because you know the Welsh Party, they speak up very much for Wales first and then the UK. Boris speaks very much for London first and then the UK, and I would see the structures of the parties, you know, the devolved parties, you know, in Scotland, in Northern Ireland and Wales, and within the regions in London, being able to articulate better. Now that is why the SNP, they won a massive landslide this year, a phenomenal landslide. But they have one third of their voters are unionists. You know, they have no desire for independence. They would vote against independence, but they're going out and voting for the SNP because they're getting the message from them that they like on all the other policies. That's where the third of the SNP voters, that's our lost voters. That's the voters that were voting for us pre-1997. They've moved to a new home who are representing them better. When it comes to Alex Salmond's referendum, they're going to go against them. But they're going to keep going for him. We need to be offering these guys something more, something better. And we absolutely can. Murdo's name change idea. You guys tried a different name in 2010. How did that work out for you?
We have
this great, you know, the candidates in Scotland, the activists in Scotland, we've got a bit of a feeling that it might work just as well as you. You know, there is no golden bullet of a magic name that's going to demonstrate to the people of Scotland that we'll put Scotland's needs and requirements first. There's not. What there is seeing people seeing the policies and seeing the actions. Do you know, in Scotland, we've not been called the... Well, in fact, we were never called the Tories in Scotland, but the Tories haven't been a party since 1841. When I'm out in the doors, I'm still a Tory. Sometimes an effing Tory, I'm sometimes a Tory B, but I'm still a Tory, right? And it is, we've not had that since 1841. So the thought of changing our name, just the Unionists or the Progressives or the Caledonians, there's some of the names that have been mooted, the thought that we can suddenly say, no, I'm not a Tory, I'm not a Tory, I've not been since 1841, and actually this year I'm a Caledonian. If you think that's going to wash for the electorate, it's not, it's definitely not going to work. But the key thing with us, Murdo was in a position where we've been losing elections. Murdo's been in a leadership battle. Murdo's been in a leadership position for the last two Holyrood elections when we've been trounced. And he had to do something radical, okay? So he had to come up with a big idea to show that he was not the establishment candidate to batter against the tide of change. And this is where Murdo's big idea is coming from, so that Murdo, the establishment candidate, can be seen as the radical candidate who's offering the most change. So it is. So there's a bit of a... There's a bit of smoke and mirrors going on with this, but he's certainly seized the agenda. I do think the parts across Scotland, the Northern Ireland and the Northern Ireland politics, how should you set yourselves up? I'm a Conservative. I would dearly love to see the Conservatives doing very, very well in Northern Ireland. And it is. And my naive, and I will freely admit my experience with the Conservatives in Northern Ireland is sort of 6 months helping Mark Hill of the Ulster Unionists. But I mean, my outsider thing would be I would dearly like to see the Conservatives doing well here, and would dearly like to see the centre-right people in Northern Ireland joining up. But I dearly want to see Labour set up and campaigning here properly as well, and the Liberal Democrats here and campaigning as well. And that's what I want to see, is that normalisation. If you can call the politics in Scotland normal, because you can't. You know, I want to see... I want to see Labour representation here in Northern Ireland. I want to see Liberal Democrat representation here. And I want to see Conservative representation here. But that's 10 minutes.
That's great, Ian. Thank you. Let me just welcome Ian. And if you and Bill want to decide who's going next, I'm just going to ask this, Ian, one question that was interested. And it's in the context of the Ulster Unionists and the DUP. Yeah. When you say there are unionists in Scotland who vote SNP, you said it was because they like the policies. Would it also, though, be because they perceive the SNP currently to be a very strong, united, coherent party?
Yeah, absolutely. There are many reasons for it. One of them is, one of the clear ones is Alex Hammond is the best politician in that parliament by a long, long way. Okay, but what we see is, so we say, where are the good Scottish Conservatives? Where are the good Scottish politicians? And we look and say, I hate to say Liam Fox, but we look and say Liam Fox, if you could use that one, Michael Gove, Ian Duncan Smith. We look and say, do you know what? The best Scottish Conservative politicians, they're down in the cabinet at the UK, and why would they not be? Because we're a unionist party, and Westminster is where it's at.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same for Labour Party. You have a look, and again, I hate to say Gordon Brown, but you look down, you see Gordon Brown, Jim Murphy, Alistair Darling, the best Labour politicians. They're down at Westminster as well, of course they are. You look at the Liberal Democrats and say, where are the best Scottish Liberal Democrat politicians? And again, it's Michael Moore, it's Danny Alexander, it's Charles Kennedy. These guys are down at Westminster, and why wouldn't they be? Whereas you look at the SNP and say, where are their best politicians? They're in Holyrood, okay? And it is, and you can't...
Yeah.
And we've not addressed that properly yet. So yes, they look at the front bench of the SNP, say there's a strong united team, and actually they're more talented... Mm-hmm. I'm more committed because they don't have the leakage of MSPs going, fine, I'm in Holyrood now, but it's a passage for me to get to Westminster. I'll do a term in Holyrood, I'll get a nice safe seat down for Westminster, and then I can get into cabinet and make the big decisions. So that's a big part of why they see a strong united party there with a vision. But also the SNP are a broad coalition. There are some folks hard right in the SNP, and there are also hard left in the SNP. Mm. So there's a right mix of policies there, because they're held together by their united vision of we want to see an independent Scotland. Okay. If they gain that, then it all splits. But there's policies in that mix to suit everybody. So there is. There's good Conservative policies they come out with and I applaud. And there's some awful socialism comes out of them. And I go, what a fucking...
Okay.
I think it's a really interesting point there that Ian has actually pointed out, that as the Ulster Unionist Party we decided just forego Westminster to put our best people into Stormont, and I think that's a great starting point for us. So we've just completely given up on the Westminster thing. Our best people are now in Stormont. I'm Bill Manwaring. I've been involved politically with the Ulster Unionist Party and the Conservatives for 3 years in December. Happy birthday me. I got involved in politics because I got sick and tired of sitting complaining about stuff. I worked for a number of years with voluntary community sector groups, and I've seen changes going on since devolution that I really wanted to do something about. So I picked the UCOMF project as as my initial support, and we got, always forgotten about, we got Jim Nicholson elected to Europe. So you know, there is a UCOMF success out there. He is sitting in Europe, he's doing good things for Northern Ireland, and I think we need to recognise that the whole project wasn't an absolute disaster. When you take a listen to what Ian said, what I'm going to try and do is really just take what Ian has said and apply what he said blow for blow to a Northern Ireland context. Ian pointed out that there was a 12% vote for Conservatives in Scotland. The UCOMF project in 2010 took 15% of the Northern Ireland vote. So we're actually percentage-wise ahead So there are more people in Northern Ireland who supported a pro-Conservative election campaign in Northern Ireland than supported the same campaign in Scotland. So we have something to start from. One of the things that Ian clearly pointed out was the issue that the Conservatives in Scotland are seen as an English party. Conservatism in Scotland has failed because it has disengaged from the grassroots. My opinion is that politics in Northern Ireland is failing because we haven't engaged with the grassroots. We've forgotten about that. And nowhere is that more apparent than within the Ulster Unionist Party. I think if we want to move ourselves forward and increase our vote to a point where we can, and let's face it, we're looking at a 40,000 vote swing in Northern Ireland to move the nature of our party from being the, oh, look at them, sure they're still there, just, to, wow, suddenly they're playing in the big scene again. That's the same swing as I took, and I'm going to be full of myself here, Mike, I'm sorry, but from the Westminster election 2010 to the Assembly election 2011, the West Belfast UUP vote, or Conservative Unionist vote, went up by 47%. Yep, we went from 1,000 to 1,471 votes, okay? We replicate that swing across all of the constituencies, and we're the largest party. But seriously, the engagement in Scotland with Conservatives is lack of grassroots understanding. People see the Conservative Party and think they're only interested in English issues, they're not interested in our issues. We bring that over to Northern Ireland, we have a political structure that is Protestant or Catholic. It's not nationalist and unionist. I've sat during two election campaigns, and I just want to point out that I actually lost two Westminster campaigns in a 12-month period, okay? Which has got to be something
that
of a,
be 5 years to
a bit of a record, okay? Two Westminster campaigns.
You're only playing at it.
In a one-year period. It is. It's like an AA for political wannabes up here, isn't it? I'm Bill Manwaring, and I failed three elections. But in that time, we did some very bold things. We took Lord Trimble, and we went to Anderson's Town, and we knocked on doors in the middle of Anderson's Town, and we received a positive welcome. We weren't chased off with pitchforks or shotguns, you know. It was good. I sat with families in the middle of West Belfast, the middle of nationalist West Belfast, who said, Bill, if there was a referendum tomorrow, I will vote to stay in the United Kingdom, because I believe that's where we should be. But I could never vote for a unionist politician, because I believe a unionist politician hates my religion. These are the issues. Ian's talking about naturally unionist voters voting for the SNP because they answer the call that they want to hear. Okay? We have the same situation here. There are people who are natural unionists who will not vote for the unionist parties because what they hear is, we don't want your sort. We've got to change that. The only way to change that is to broaden how we deliver politics. Now, the discussion here about Conservative in Scotland changing its name is exactly the same as my argument here why the UUP, as the centre-right party of Northern Ireland, has to keep its name. If it walks like a Conservative in Scotland, and it dresses like a Conservative in Scotland, and it talks like a Conservative in Scotland, it's a Conservative no matter what you call it. We change our name here, we're still the UUP. It doesn't matter. What we have to do is re-engage with grassroots politics, get down and dirty with people in their issues, on the streets, in their communities, and show that we actually care enough to want to work to help them one by one. It's what we've been doing for the last 2.5 years in West Belfast. The Shankill, believe me, as a unionist enclave, is not a natural home for Conservatives. Okay? I was told at least twice during the Westminster campaign that I should go away off to England where I belonged because I wasn't welcome on the Shankill Road. When I pointed out I was born in the Shankill, one of the guys nearly hit me. But it's not a natural ground, but we've been able to build a vote there. We've been able to build a support base there because we're working on the ground. We have people who have committed to what we're doing, giving their time freely to work on the ground. If the Conservatives